Pam McKinnon is a wonderful theater director who has directed for the stage, off-Broadway, on-Broadway, and in regional theater. She won the Obie Award for directing and received a Tony Award nomination, Best Director for her work on Clybourne Park. In 2013, she received the Tony Award for Best Direction of a Play for a revival of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Charles Isherwood of the New York Times praised it for superlative staging and the exhilaration of a fresh encounter with a great work of theater revitalized anew. Pam McKinnon will be giving the 20th Annual Burian Lecture on Monday, April 18th, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Pam McKinnon to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great thrill to have you on the program.
Oh, you're welcome, Joe. It's a pleasure.
Very nice to have you here. When you go out and you speak like this, what is the ultimate message that you want to get out?
I don't know that I've ever actually spoken like this. I mean, I've certainly spoken, you know, I've certainly spoken at theaters. You know, you try to sort of suss out, so who is the audience? So that would be a question I'll have. You know, whether it's young artists, whether it's, you know, people who go to the theater, whether it's old artists, you know, I'm sort of curious who's in the audience, and I'll sort of pitch, you know, hopefully pitch some answers, you know, so that they're interested.
How did you get involved in this in the first place? Your role was not originally, your dream job was not originally in the theater. So how did you migrate there?
Well, I acted a lot as a kid throughout junior high and high school and even early college. And then around age 19, and this was at the University of Toronto, I decided, oh, I have to get serious. It's time to get serious. So I left theater, you know, even as an extracurricular activity, and studied some very interesting things, had some great professors. I wound up having a double major in economics and political science, graduated with that. And my father, at the time, he's now retired, but was a university professor, also in the social sciences and geography. And I said, okay, well, I've always been a good student. Academia might be for me. And these are, you know, incredible stories to mine. So I wound up in a PhD program in political science at the University of California out in San Diego. And I arrived in San Diego sight unseen and started studying. And about a year into my studies there, realized, oh, I am not as fundamentally interested in these stories, which when you're writing a PhD dissertation in the social sciences, you actually have to have answerable questions. I was not interested in answerable questions, I realized. So at the age 22, 23 or so, I redefined what serious is. And it's not the content of what you're doing in your life that needs to be quote-unquote serious. It's your relationship to it. And I did some soul-searching and realized the last time that I was really serious, fundamentally, biologically, at the cellular level, serious about something, was telling stories in the theater. And I went back to that, realized I don't think I had the stamina or the sort of emotional interest in becoming an actor, and started to pursue directing out in San Diego. And that was now, you know, a lot of years ago. I was in San Diego for a couple of years. I hopped back to one of my hometowns, Toronto, and then I hopped to New York City, and I've been in New York about 21 years.
That idea of not having, of not looking for definitive answers to questions, do you think that helps in your role as a director and your success in directing?
Yeah, absolutely. That it is about the pursuit of the answer and not necessarily getting there. But, you know, directing is such a conversational art form. You know, I surround myself with sort of experts, whether it's experts in acting or experts in design, and I sort of conversationally ask questions and definitely sometimes have, you know, quote-unquote demands, and we then pursue collectively some kind of story that we put out there.
One of the most incredible performances I ever saw in a theater was that of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and the production that you won the Tony for. That was such a beautiful and gorgeous production, and it also, in some way, and I'm curious as to how you look at it, you have worked on Edward Albee's canon, if you will, for so many years. So was this, I mean, was this the crowning achievement to put this great work on stage to such great acclaim?
It certainly was fun. I mean, it, you know, it's such a great play. And you know, and we started in Chicago at Steppenwolf Theater, and we knew we were going to hop that production to Washington D.C. at Arena Stage, and we had it was not built for a New York run, let alone for a Broadway run, and so you know, working in Chicago with this great acting company and Tracy Letts and Amy Morton. And then through auditions, finding Madison Dirks and Carrie Coon, and then diving into what is an impossible play. It's a feat of stamina for those actors. It's also a feat of stamina just to rehearse it as a director, to hold that story in your soul for hours and hours. And we just had, you know, a really, really good time. And it was a great Chicago run, and it got deeper through the run, and then we got to do it again, and it got deeper through that run, and then we had a year off from it, and everyone had a lot of work in that year. And at the very end of the D.C. run, actually, I should say, a New York producer, Jeffrey Richards, came down very much as a courtesy call to say hi to some of the actors who he had worked with. And he has told me, this is Jeffrey Richards, told me that it was at the first intermission, so only a third of the way through that play, where he said, I have to bring this into New York. And so a year later, we went back into the rehearsal hall, and I felt that all of us had grown as artists, and that play had taken deep root while we'd all worked on different projects, and we got to tackle it again. So, you know, they're like regardless of awards, you know, sort of down the road of that season and critical acclaim, it was just an amazing group of people, and I feel very fortunate that we sort of hopped through time together for a couple years.
Pam MacKinnon is our guest. She's a Tony Award-winning theater director who will be giving the 20th annual Burian Lecture with the New York State Writers Institute on Monday, April 18th at 8 o'clock at the Recital Hall in the Performing Arts Center of the Uptown Campus at the University at Albany. I'm curious also as to what you think the lure for you is to Edward Albee and his work.
There's something just so smart about his characters, even if they are inarticulate at times, that they use language as a tool to attempt to do something to another person on stage, which, you know, is sort of fundamental, I suppose, in any theatrical project. You know, you have to have an action to act. But it generally is through language in Edward's work, and I guess I come from that place, maybe as a child of an academic. You know, I sort of lived in that world as a kid and live in that world as a director. So that, you know, I think is an initial hook. I also just love and sort of demand this of any story I'm going to spend weeks and weeks, months and months tackling, that and Edward's plays do this in spades. There's a real sense of humor, even if there is an underlying, you know, agenda at, you know, provoking the audience, pushing the audience with the story, demanding something of the audience. There, it's also with a sly sense of humor, which I so appreciate, and it sort of makes, quote, the medicine go down much more easily.
When you look for a play to direct, do you keep in mind, or is it something, a conscious decision as to, it would be fun to do a revival, I would like to do something new, I would really like to helm something from the beginning, from the ground up? Is that part of the conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love to have a mix of things. That's why you keep on coming back. Every project is very different. You know, this is now a career that's already spanned, you know, 20 plus years. And, you know, I keep on coming back for more. You know, I'm involved right now in directing a musical, and musicals take forever to put up, and I'm finding that as a director of a musical, you actually start, it seems, sort of earlier than you would even with a brand new play. And I'm working on a musical based on the French movie Amelie. We did a production of it at Berkeley Rep, and we're in the process now of next steps. And future productions of it. And I first started working on this particular show about 3 years ago, when it was not even a script, but a treatment and probably five songs. And now, now it's a full three-dimensional production. And that's hugely gratifying. These days, I'm also reading a lot of Molière. I mean, it's also really fun to imagine putting on an extant play that, works. Diving into that as, the project is to go, it's sort of like Virginia Woolf, to go as deep as you can and throw yourself into something, but you know already that that extant piece is going to catch you. I love doing both.
Let me ask you about one revival that you directed recently, and that is the Heidi Chronicles on Broadway, Wendy Wasserstein. And one of the things that came up in the reviews was it too soon, or was it something, because this was the first major revival of a Wendy Wasserstein work. I'm interested in your thoughts on that, of how it went. The show did close early, and I'm just interested in what you think that means about the timing of a play and finding its place.
Yeah, I don't know why we closed early. I mean, we just never found our audience. But, I think that audience was out there, and the people who came certainly responded to the play. And unfortunately, that play, which really looks in a very personal way through the lens of some friends, it looks at the feminist movement. And unfortunately, it remains incredibly relevant. And I think people who saw it were struck by that. Now, why we didn't find our audience, I don't know. Is it, was it the ad campaign? Was it marketing? Was it too soon? It's really hard to know. We certainly got wonderful notices, and Elizabeth Moss, fantastic actress in the title role, even garnered a Tony nomination. I'm incredibly proud of it. And it was just, that was also just a joy to work on. It was a fantastic company of actors and a really great play. It was the first time, actually, with the exception of my wonderful set designer, John Lee Beatty, it was the first time that I was the oldest person in the room. And that's also that weird sort of workplace thing. I mean, directing and, theater you think is an art, but it's also just simply my workplace. And so to be the oldest person in the room, and it's a play that starts in, I believe, 1962,
right,
and goes up to what used to be its present, 1989. Now, I certainly wasn't alive in 62, but around scene three, I have childhood memories of those eras, and my company just did not. So they were like cracking open, feminist theory textbooks, and that didn't even exist when I was a kid. And asking, there was one time when I had one of my wonderful actresses. She said, "So wait, so I've been on a payphone. So there are no cell phones yet?" I said, "There are no cell phones in this entire play. Not just this scene, but this entire play. Put that out of your mind. The only way to keep in touch with a friend is a long distance phone call. A letter." There is no email. There is no Facebook. So
yes,
the play about friendship without Facebook was just sort of, oh, this is very difficult. Yes, it is. It is very difficult to keep in touch. So it was a real joy to put on. And I also really enjoyed listening to audience feedback. A lot of people said, "Oh my goodness, this is so deeply personal," and both takes one back if you're of that generation, but also just feels so current if you're younger.
Jason Biggs and Bryce Pinkham in that show as well. I remember when I saw it, I was just when Elizabeth Moss comes out at the beginning and is giving this lecture. Of just the language just brings you in, and it really never lets you go. The language of that play is gorgeous.
Yeah, it really is. And that's it's also why I'm attracted to Edward. I mean, it's I'm a very language based. There's a real music to it, but there's also like real hooks in it, and it's such a joy for actors because it's so playable. Wendy Wasserstein was a master.
You talk about enjoying that audience feedback. I assume there was a lot of conversation, and I know it was something that was elicited during the run of Clyburn Park. There were different things of articles and various pieces that were even distributed in the playbill at that show of getting people to think further than to what was just happening on the stage. I assume that made it a very interesting and also very rewarding experience.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely, definitely pushed some buttons, and you know, again, sort of the notion of testing people to really tap into, you know, how far have we really come? I mean, that's, you know, the act one, act two structure of that play, of act one riffing on Lorraine Hansberry's Raisin in the Sun. So taking place, it's sort of the offstage action of Lorraine Hansberry's play. How did this house get sold? How did the Ungers move into this white neighborhood? And then in act two, it's that same house, but 50 years later, you know, sort of the conversational tactics between black and white property owners have changed, but actually, you know, at the core, it's still very hot and heavy. It's about, you know, race and real estate, and definitely audience members, you know, talked a lot about their own gentrification experiences, and older audience members talked about recalling, oh yes, my people my age, mid 40s, talked about my, you know, parents moving them out to the suburbs for, quote, the better schools. What does that mean? It was very, very personal.
The most recent show you directed was China Doll on Broadway with Al Pacino. It was a show that got ravaged by critics. I'm curious as to how you look back on that experience of working with two legends, of David Mamet and Al Pacino, and coming out of it with something. And I guess do you even look at it that way as caring as to how it was critically received?
Yeah, I was sort of amazed at how, you know, beaten up in the critical press that we got. I mean, it was a fantastic experience. It was a brand new play by David Mamet, and Al Pacino and I worked on it with David for a couple years. New York was the first production, but we got together sort of whenever we could for 2 days here, 5 days there, of sitting around a table and reading it, and David rewriting it, and that continued through previews, and actually even after we opened, we put in another ending that David wrote. You know, he was out in L.A., but he had a brainstorm one day, and so he sent Al and me a handful of pages and said, if you have the gumption, this is how I think it should end. And so we went back into rehearsal after we opened. It was definitely hard. You know, those guys are, as you said, legends, and but you know, and geniuses at their craft, and expect, you know, amazing things from themselves and from the people that they're working with. I so appreciate my professional friendship with both of them, and it was a real, at times, you know, an incredible pleasure, especially to work with Al as we were going through previews, and he's such an amazing actor, and to watch him and watch, you know, we had these sold out houses in this larger playhouse, I think 1,100 seats at the Schoenfeld, and Al could hold the back of the mezzanine. And it's, you know, not many people know how to do that, you know, from a Broadway stage anymore. And he's 75, and he has this amazing stage charisma that is just undeniable. And you know, I feel very, very fortunate to have gotten to work with him.
And do you look at those experiences, successful or not? I guess all these experiences are teaching moments in a way, right? That you learn something from them for the next time around.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, and as I said earlier, each gig takes on its own characteristic, and my role keeps on shifting, you know, to go from, you know, being the oldest person in the room to the youngest person in the room, you know, and everything in between. And, you know, a new play that was still finding its feet when we were putting it out in front of audiences. You know, it's just, yeah, each one gives you, or gives me, just more sort of muscle.
Just as you come to Albany on the 18th, we're getting close to Tony time. Is there a play on Broadway right now that you think is just really worthy and a great show, a new play?
Oh, a new play. I'm a little behind. I'm a Tony voter, so I wind up seeing everything.
Excellent.
Which is a real both responsibility as well as a blessing. But I'm a little bit behind right now. I mean, I loved In the Fall. It's already closed, but
yep.
The revival of the musical Spring Awakening
is beautiful.
by the Deaf West Company. I thought that was fantastic and just incredibly moving. I'd seen the original and really liked it, but this one really sort of struck me at my core. I think it's also closed, the revival of A View from the Bridge that
yes.
Ivo van Hove directed, the fall and winter. That also, I just love the geometry and the, you know, sort of the stripped down mise-en-scène and letting those actors really tear into each other. I mean, those are the two that really come to mind right now.
I asked about plays because I just assume that Hamilton will win everything else.
Yeah, I think it will. I think that's true. And I haven't seen it yet. I just got my Tony voter letter, and I'm going to, you know, pitch them a few dates, and they'll tell me if I'm allowed to come to see it.
Well, I wish you well.
Thank you.
At least we know it won't be on the 18th. April 18th, Monday night, you have a seminar at the Recital Hall in the Performing Arts Center, and then the Burian Lecture takes place at 8 o'clock in the Recital Hall at the Performing Arts Center and the Uptown campus at the University at Albany. Pam McKinnon, what a great pleasure to speak with you. I've been a great admirer of your work for a long time, and it's just a delight to speak with you.
Thank you, Joe. It was really, really fun.
Pam McKinnon will deliver the 20th annual Burian Lecture at the University at Albany on Monday, April 18th at 8 o'clock in the Recital Hall of the Performing Arts Center on the University at Albany's Uptown campus. Earlier that same day at 4:15, McKinnon will offer an informal seminar, which will also be held in the Recital Hall. You can visit the New York State Writers Institute online for more information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.